You're listening to KPOO San Francisco. This is Reality Sandwich. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living, and you're listening to our radio show, Reality Sandwich. And I also have with me my co-host,
Martin Matthews. Am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay. I am a certified medical hypnotherapist, personal coach, and Healthful Living advocate. And cohort with Healthful Living with my wife, Julie.
And you can find out more information about us and all of our past shows and future shows at healthfullivingsf.com, SF as in San Francisco.
Right. Although not just San Franciscans can be healthy.
That's right.
Although it does seem...
Equal opportunity.
It does seem, though, upon very recent observation of our recent visit to Los Angeles... I mean, we love everyone in the state, but, you know, there's L.A. and then there's San Francisco, two very distinct cities, and right now there's a big SF after our Healthful Living because we are in San Francisco, which, fortunately, at least geographically speaking, has a greater environment for sustaining of health. Isn't that true, Julie? We have better air coming in off the coast.
Oh, well, we definitely have healthier air quality. In fact, they say 2 weeks in L.A. does something astronomical to your chance of getting... what's it called? Asthma.
Asthma.
If you're a child, it's very poor air quality down there. So we're fortunate enough to have the breeze coming off the bay, and unfortunately, San Francisco's sort of unique in that the rest of the Bay Area kind of gets socked in with all the rest of the pollution. So it's unfortunate for it. Sort of seems that San Francisco has a lot cleaner air than a lot of places in the Bay Area and the state, for that matter. But we're fortunate to live here. We pay for it, but we've got fresh air. So, and as you'll hear from our show a little bit later, fresh air is not to be taken for granted after what we've been through this week. But today we have a mixture of, what do I want to say, topics on, all related to Reality Sandwich. Basically, kind of the theme of Reality Sandwich, talking about what reality really is, how much people are in denial, and how we can work to have a healthier environment.
Well, yeah, essentially, it's Reality Sandwich is simply about stopping and acknowledging the nature of the co-created reality that we've developed here on, you know, planet Earth as a whole bunch of humans who've evolved over time to a very set of complex organisms that we're now populating this world and doing all kinds of things. And I think if you want to step way back and look at that from a sort of Carl Sagan-esque cosmos kind of perspective, it's important, especially when we look around and very clearly see some major things going on in our world today with the economy and the war and the situation with what the banks are doing to people, and now with the total health tyranny of our government trying to create vaccines against bird flus that can be given to you against your will. It's important that we stop and look at what's really going on. And every week on Reality Sandwich, we have various topics about the state of reality and identifying areas where we, the human race, are in major denial about the implications of our behavior. So that was a very long-winded answer, and I apologize. I tend to have the tendency to do that sometimes, but I want to touch base with you, Julie, because you and I just came back from Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have our caller?
We have our caller.
Oh, we do. So we'll get back to that Long Beach and the Autism Conference in just a few moments.
Yeah, so we're going to start actually off the show, assuming we can get him on the line here. Amadeus Star Gioeli. I hope I got that right. And he is the author of Cancer is Good for You. So I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say. Let's see if we can get him on the line. Star, are you there?
Hello, Julie. Yes, I am.
Hello. Good to have you on.
It's great to be on. I'm looking forward to our interview.
Yes.
I love San Francisco. I spend a lot of time there.
Great. In fact, you met one of our friends at one of our favorite stores, Rainbow Grocery.
That's the place.
So, you know, you're... The title of your book, very unique. I am very curious. What does the title of this book really mean?
Okay, I'm really glad you asked that question because that's a key question. And most people pick up my book and at first they're shocked by cancer is good for you, and then they go, oh, I know what that means. And they start reading my book with the idea that they know what it means. And it's probably safe to say that no one knows what it means until they read my book, what it means to me, that title. And here is what it means to me in a word, organomutagenesis, organomutagenesis. It's a word that I have created and am on the verge of getting into Webster's Dictionary, and I just need to publish one more work containing that word, and it will be in the dictionary. And it is a word to replace cancer, because the word cancer does not have an appropriate meaning. It has a lot of negative emotional triggers, and if it had literal intelligent and scientific meaning, I think just knowing the word would tell you something about cancer and how to deal with it, how to prevent it, etc. But it doesn't have any of those. Whereas my word, organomutagenesis, is the whole story. And what organomutagenesis means is that when you have a condition which is diagnosed as what is commonly called cancer, you are really witnessing the body's attempt to create a new organ to correct some blood chemistry disorder or imbalance. And if you cooperate with the process of organomutagenesis rather than fighting it, as with the concept of cancer, I mean, the only way to deal with cancer is with, bombs and bullets, same way as if you feel, certain races or people are evil, basically, then there's only one way to deal with that. But with this condition, commonly known as cancer, the boogeyman concept was a creation of someone's imagination, and it caught on because most people are so inclined to believe in that sort of thing. And the whole industry is based on fear, which is provoked by the concept of cancer, which is commonly proliferated by the professions which benefit from this fear.
And when you talk about blood chemistry disorders, what are you speaking of there?
Well, it could be, let's take the most simple thing for people to follow along with. Let's supposing someone has an environmental challenge. For instance, they work in a factory where they're making plastics or something like that, and they're breathing in some kind of dust or fumes that are carcinogenic or unhealthy. Okay, well, how this works is that, a certain amount of this toxin is absorbed through the lungs or skin, or those are generally the main places that ambient toxins are taken in, through the skin and through the lungs. And the normal organs, when I say the normal organs, I mean, the lungs, the kidneys, liver, those organs that we're all familiar with, will in some way attempt to deal with this toxin. Now, the ways they can deal with it are several. One way, of course, is to resist it. Closure, closing the pores, stopping breathing, etc. When that is impractical, then another system might kick in where antibodies attempt to neutralize or transform the toxin into something non-toxic, or eliminating it. If it gets into the bloodstream, then certain eliminative organs might be able to handle the toxin. But since a lot of the toxins we encounter in modern society are modern toxins, and our body is not modern, our body is ancient, sometimes we don't have the hardware or the software to deal with a particular brand new kind of, by brand new I mean less than 1,000 years old, kind of toxin. So,
and also when you get multiple toxins mixed together at the same time, the effect is much stronger than a single toxin.
Yes, and there is an effect that I will talk about momentarily. I would like you to keep that thought in mind and bring up the idea of multiple toxins again. in case we skip over it. But so what you're seeing then is, you know, there are things in place for the body to handle these toxins. So what's the problem? You know, I mean, so we, you know, so we eat junk food and we breathe junk air and watch junk TV. And so our body can is this miracle that we depend on to manage all this stuff and sort it out, right? And that's, I think, based on history. You know, yesterday I ate this goopy red thing, you know, that I bought in the candy store, and I didn't die. Mm-hmm. So we go, well, so what's the problem?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, anyway, the problem is sometimes it just doesn't, it isn't adequate. The old organs just don't have what it takes to deal with the new toxins. So the body has a trump card, and this trump card is organomutagenesis. That means the body can attempt to create a new organ or tissue to handle this particular blood chemistry disorder.
Hmm.
Now, this trump card is very, very unlikely to succeed because you're asking for a process very much like, in fact, identical to evolution, to happen in one lifetime, in one body.
Right.
It's not likely to happen, but, you know, it does happen sometimes. And what the result of that is a benign tumor. Now, a benign tumor is looked at by the oncological, conventional oncological profession as doing nothing, because they think what these tumors are supposed to do is be bad, malignant. They call them bad, you know,
mm-hmm.
malignant means the same thing.
So
these bad guys are what their specialty is. So when they see a benign tumor, they like, it's like if George Bush went over to Iraq and there was some nice person that he met, he would kind of like have to look the other way as if he didn't see that nice person.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So hey, I have a question for you.
Oncologists do the same thing. They see a benign tumor and they kind of look the other way as if, oh, well, this isn't really, you know, appropriate, or this isn't typical or normal or something, because they think that cancer is normal and benign tumors are not normal.
So Star, I have my co-host Martin here with me. I think he has a question for you. Hold on one second.
Hey, so where in your research and your analysis of all of these processes in the body that you're describing, did you discern that what the body is doing in response to all of this is intending to create a new organ? Is that something that I mean, are you extrapolating
or has
evolution showed us that at times of great external stress that the human organism would create new organisms, you know, throughout its evolution? Is that a process that we've identified before? Is that, I mean, where are you putting all that together from?
Well, what I'm describing is a process that I think can logically be put together or intuitively put together from what we currently have as common biological knowledge. In other words, the process I'm describing is really not that abstract or unique to what we already know about mutation, adaptation, natural selection, all those kinds of things. So this particular application of those mechanisms is merely taking mechanisms which we already know are in place and lining them up with this health challenge and saying, yeah, this makes sense, this works. Now, people would call this a theory if it wasn't based on empirical or observation or testing. And I love the idea that people might consider it a theory. However, when you think about Einstein's theory of relativity or any of his theories or his information that was dealt with as theoretical, the people dealing with it didn't know it the way Einstein knew it, so they deferred it to this category of theory as if it was inferior knowledge until tested with their science. But to Einstein, it was fact, it was truth, it was his truth and his knowledge. And it was not knowledge that he got from reading a book or, you know, directly, or from listening to a lecture directly, telling him that this was in fact possible or truthful or anything like that.
Tremendous intuition.
Tremendous, yeah. And tremendous. The word theory.
Guidance, perhaps.
Pardon?
Guidance, perhaps. Perhaps guidance, he was guided.
Exactly. The word theory has the root theos, which is God.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have no problem with people relating to this information I'm giving in my book as theoretical, because all that does is shift the authorship from me to God.
So let me ask you this as we then bring it back to the title of the book in just a moment.
Okay.
What is it that the human body is to learn from this? Or what is it that we, the human race, people, are supposed to learn from this?
Well, what to learn is that biological mechanisms are reversible. And they're also cause and effect related. I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, mm-hmm. most people, when they get some illness and go to the doctor, they're kind of emphasizing or acting out a belief system,
right.
Which is that I don't know anything about this. I can't do anything about it.
Right.
I got this thing just dropped out of the sky, and now I'm going to go to the doctor, and he's got something that dropped out of the sky, that can fix it.
But you're right. Your earlier point about that the default attitude is to attack it.
Right.
You know, attack
exactly.
it, kill
well,
it.
As we do with any unknown. So the very fact that they're attacking this and afraid of it, the profession, is in fact an admission of ignorance, because that's what people attack, is what they don't know. So here's a whole profession with trillions and trillions of dollars to spend that people are giving them, when these people are standing up and yelling as loud as they can, I don't know what I'm fighting here. I don't know what it is, so I'm just going to shoot at it with whatever I got because I don't understand it.
So it sounds to me like what you're advocating is a change in the terminology, because right now we call it cancer,
right.
which implies that it is something that should be attacked,
right.
and that the entire paradigm of the Western medical community therefore sees it as such. And what you're saying is, no, we shouldn't call it cancer. We should really call it what it is.
Organomutagenesis.
Say it again, please.
Organomutagenesis.
Organomutagenesis.
Right. Organogenesis is a scientific term that is in literature, which mm-hmm. implies, you'll see it in embryological textbooks, applying to the processes by which an organism,
mm-hmm.
it's like the microcosm of the embryo. You're watching one organ develop rather than watching the whole embryo develop.
Right. And then that by...
Organogenesis is the creation of an organ from a single cell.
And that by changing the name, we will then properly identify this process such that we can really seriously look at alternative means of
Absolutely.
Addressing it, as has been very successful by many practitioners. I've got to name Deepak for one, Deepak Chopra, who articulates very well that in order to change the proliferation of a cancer, we must radically alter the environment in which it was created, which is kind of what we're talking about here, is that it
Absolutely.
Was created because
change
of a radical...
Lifestyle.
Absolutely radically altering the internal terrain.
So in the last couple minutes here, can you give us a sense of does your book talk about what you can do about it, what to do about these
yes.
blood chemistries?
Yes. Now, you brought up a point about multiple toxins.
Yes.
And one of the reasons why organomutagenesis usually fails or miscarries and people wind up with something which is termed as malignant is these multiple toxins, because the body is really attempting to create a new organ to deal with a specific toxin. And all the other toxins that they're putting in their body simultaneously kind of interfere with the process as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not only is it an unlikely process to succeed under the ideal circumstances, it's proceeding under the least ideal circumstances. You know, somebody who smokes cigarettes probably drinks, stays up too late, watches scary movies, you know, drinks coffee, you know, that sort of thing. So the body is really hard-pressed to succeed at creating a unique organ to specifically deal with a toxin.
And so are there some ways that you're suggesting that they can rid their body of these toxins?
Yes.
And
yes, I think that if people grasp the concept of organomutagenesis, they will look at themselves like a woman with a child rather than a human with a disease. In other words, if somebody is diagnosed with this condition formerly known as cancer, then the first thing they should think of is, rather than death, is they should think of organomutagenesis and remission. And the way to do that is by taking the advice you would give to a woman who is pregnant. You know, get your rest, exercise, eat good food, don't watch scary movies, you know, watch who you hang around with and where you hang around, and take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. Get healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Healthy people don't have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
That is basically my healing system. Is if somebody is alive today and they have this idea that they have cancer, any step that they take today makes them healthier today. So they're probably going to live. Their possibility of living and surviving this challenge is greater. And
right.
If they take more of these steps, the more of these steps they take, the greater is their probability of surviving this challenge. And there is nothing short of perfect health that people should adopt as a goal. They should be really heading for perfect health rather than just making decisions to get rid of the cancer.
You are absolutely correct, and
yeah.
That ties
this
us right back
into trouble.
Ties right back into the core principles of healthful living.
Right.
Absolutely, because then they'll be looking in these so-called, you know, natural stores for bottles containing something natural that's going to take care of their cancer. And there's just nothing like that.
Sure. Well, Star, thank you so much for being on today. How can people get a hold of your book?
Okay. It is currently only available on my website, which is cancerisgoodforyou.com.
Okay.
Cancerisgoodforyou.com. You can contact me by email, and it's almadeusstar@hotmail.com, almadeusstar@hotmail.com. You can phone me at 951-659-0070. I would prefer people go to the website first, and that may take care of all of their questions and provide them with the avenue they need to acquire the book.
Okay.
Thank you so much for being on.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you for the good work, and I hope that you succeed in getting that changed.
Thank you very much, and have a beautiful day.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Bye. Well, that's perfect. That led right into the rest of our conversation, or much of the rest of our conversation today, which is talking about our environment and toxins and a variety of experiences we've had in the last 4 days.
Well, that was a great topic, actually. I had no idea what he was going to talk about initially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he said that long word. And once I started thinking about it, I was like, yeah, you know, that's another area. That's a great reality sandwich topic where we can stop and see how much something is affected by what we call it, how we identify it, and how we react to it.
Mm-hmm.
And how, interestingly, the community of people that are so perpetuating that, you know, attack negative thing, profit from it.
Absolutely. So what do we want to do? We want to start with L.A.? Do we want to start with our relative's home? Or do we want to start with our other relative's home and the fact that our dog is sick?
Okay. Let's start with L.A.
Okay.
I was just getting into the reality sandwich thing before about this major, major epidemic nationally. We talk about it often here on the show, the autism epidemic. And you and I just came back from a conference in Long Beach for Defeat Autism Now. And it was the first time that I got a chance to really be there and hear a lot of, you know, cutting-edge information about what's happening with autism treatment, how the Western medical community is dealing with it, how the rapidly increasing group of doctors and clinicians who are really stopping and looking at what is going on here and how can we work and help and treat these kids. And then to just kind of get the bigger picture about how the vaccinations are implicated in, you know, a percentage of this, you know, it's not fully to blame, but there's definitely something going on, and how much the government is suppressing that information.
Mm.
Because so we can't come together and awaken to this reality, because if we do so, we're going to get in a lot of trouble, essentially, we being this kind of collective, you know, society.
What do you mean by trouble?
Well, trouble would be that if we actually acknowledged that the mercury in the vaccines was affecting and, in fact, causing a lot of these incidences of autism, then there'd be a, you know, huge implications in pharmaceutical industries and lawsuits beyond 1,000 times greater than we could ever imagine.
Right. And for people that are listening, as we learned and as we know from the conference, of course, we talk about mercury because mercury is one of the most toxic substances on Earth for the brain, but also there are so many other substances. There's formaldehyde, aluminum, and a variety of other toxins.
Lead?
In the vaccinations, specifically, and as well as, like you said, in the environment, lead, and as Star was talking about, plastics and all sorts of other things. As we know, these kids are basically highly toxic, and there it's creating all sorts of brain inflammation and a variety of problems. So it's not just as simple as mercury and vaccines, because what people then say is, oh, well, they took the mercury out of the vaccines, which they've taken a great deal out, but they haven't taken all of it out. And especially the flu vaccine, I have clients all the time that have given their child quite a number of flu vaccines, and there is a significant, at least 10 times the amount of safe mercury in the flu shot per shot. So there are a lot of things just other than just our standard childhood vaccinations and the mercury. But your point is very well made that when are we going to wake up that all of these things that we're using in our home, just as one example of our environment, that are so toxic. They said that the average home is 70 times more toxic than your average municipal building.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and we sleep there. We spend hours there. It's the off-gassing of the plastics and things in the carpet, the backing of the carpet and the glues.
It's the new car smell.
Right.
I want the new car smell.
Exactly. It's the off-gassing of the toxins in the car. It's the, they mix 23 different chemicals simply in the cement that are used in the foundation for the house. You know, that's just one example.
What was the statistic that we saw about, I think it was in the last 20 years, something like 89,000 new chemicals created?
Yes, I don't remember the exact, but it's
and
tens of thousands.
And the government and the Center for Disease Control and such, all these folks that are supposed to be keeping an eye on these things, did an analysis on, what was it, like 80 of them?
Yeah,
something
maybe.
Like this. As far as, you know, did they have any really long-term negative impact potentially on human life? They just don't do it. They can't do it, nor could they ever analyze and understand the interconnections between things, you know, the different toxins and chemicals interacting with one another.
Right. Like Footstar was talking about, the let's say you just take simply three pesticides. Well, they don't test. They test one pesticide in one adult male that weighs 150 pounds. They don't test three of the maybe 30 pesticides that they use on any one given plant. Even they don't even test three of those in conjunction together, because the various combinations that you'd have to test would make it economically and time-wise impossible to test all the different combinations. But we do know from the small tests that we've done that, you know, mixing aluminum and mercury makes those two substances incredibly more toxic, or mixing two or three pesticides together makes them not three times more toxic but 20 times more toxic. So we have to not only look at all of these individually but all of these together as a group.
So it's one thing for Vioxx to get busted, right, for knowingly putting their drugs out there that, you know, caused a few heart attacks, and they kind of knew it, and they went ahead and sold the drug anyway. And then they get busted for that, and now they're dealing with it in court and X, Y, and Z. But another for this entire industry to acknowledge that, you know, this mercury in the vaccines has caused or is affecting a large part of this epidemic. It's just, it's too huge that, and too much collusion, unfortunately, between the industry and the government to allow it, that we could ever actually stop and go, oh boy, look what we did, let's fix it.
And it's you know, it's not just autism. Autism people just happen to be the canaries in the coal mine. It's the huge skyrocketing rates of asthma for children and allergies and autoimmune conditions and diabetes and, you know, the list goes on and on, ADHD. These are all the chronic conditions that all of our kids now are getting in large, large numbers. And so it does affect everybody, even if you don't know somebody with autism. It's not just those kids happen to be some of the sickest, along with, boy, the kids with leukemia and things. But there are a lot of kids just sort of scraping by with these kind of moderately chronic conditions that we don't really know what's going to happen to them later in life. Maybe now they have asthma, but in 20 years, are they going to have rheumatoid arthritis? I don't know. We don't have 50 years to study what these toxins are going to do to us.
Right, right. And it's a major area of denial. And we're not talking about it in the mainstream media. We're not talking about it collectively as a society. Mm-hmm. So it's really unfortunate. It's huge.
Well, do you want to talk about the dog next? What do you think? which toxin do you want to go to first?
Well, let's just talk a little bit about the brief time that you and I had to spend overnight before we came home in the completely antithetical environment to that which we normally like to create for ourselves, either in our home, in our city, our community, the toxic world of the home that we spent that night in with.
Well, I think what we realized was that we really must spend most of our time hanging out with people like us. So we didn't realize how toxic people typically are. And, you know, staying in the hotel with all of the, quote, air fresheners that they use and the cleaning products that they use, as well as visiting different family members and things that really use quite an array of chemicals in their home that they just assume are safe because they're allowed to be sold in the store. People don't realize, my favorite one is the air fresheners. Whether you're at a hotel or whether you're at somebody's house, you know, they have those little like Glade plugins and things. And people don't understand that those are highly toxic chemicals. In order to bind the fragrance like that, they use, I don't know if it's xylene or toluene or one of those, but it's an incredible nervous system toxin that can create, that can kill nerve cells and brain cells or nerve cells. So it can create a host of neurological problems, including brain damage and things. And, you know, when you're talking about having them in your house over years and years and years and breathing them in and day out, that can cause pretty serious problems, especially the smaller and younger you are.
Yeah, for me, it was just, you know, really seeing these things, because we don't typically, you know, where we hang out, you know, see that kind of stuff or these kind of chemicals or product all around. But I know that, you know, you see them advertised on TV and stuff. But, God, people, you know, you don't believe that they're safe just because you can buy it. You know, there really isn't some, you know, wonderful government company making sure that everything that's being sold to you is safe for you in some way. It's just not happening.
Well, there's a government company, but they're not necessarily on the ball.
Well, right? Yeah. Well, right? The people that are making the rules, they are used to work for the companies and or go back to them and vice versa.
Well,
I mean, they're regulating themselves, essentially.
The FDA was created after most of these chemicals were already in production. It was World War One, and mainly after World War Two that all of these plastic types of compounds were created. And so they brought them back and said, oh, what can we do with all these toxins that we just created? How can we use these plasticizers and things in products? And that's when all this started to boom. And then the FDA was created. So all of these chemicals were grandfathered in under something called GRAS, generally regarded as safe. And until proven otherwise, they're considered safe. And so they use these plasticizers in cosmetics. They use them in medications for time release medication. They basically, in order to slowly release medication over several hours, they coat different molecules of these chemicals in plastic, and they takes them a certain amount of hours for them to degrade in order to get that chemical into the system. And so people are actually ingesting purposely these plasticizers that we know cause endocrine disruption, rates of infertility are higher than they've ever been. They cause miscarriages. They cause birth defects. They cause, as we talked about, neurological disorders. So it's the challenge is that because the FDA came after, we now have to prove that they're not safe versus what you'd expect and what most people assume is that they were proven to be safe.
Right.
Which is not true.
It ties in perfectly to our conversation earlier in the show about the nature of the human body and how we've created so many toxins and things in our environment that our body is just not made to handle, to process. And that, you know, it could take, you know, who knows how many years before there, you know, you actually have a study to realize, you know, how long it's going to, whether it's actually having a negative effect or not.
Right.
How many decades? Are saying, assuming that it's safe. It's just, it's ludicrous.
Right. Well, how many decades did it take for us to realize that lead was poisonous to kids?
Mm-hmm.
Several decades. And now that's common knowledge. And now we can test the home and test the schools and test the kids. And we know that it's toxic if we find high levels. And we know how to detoxify it. When are we going to figure out the same thing for aluminum and mercury and plastics and all of those things? So... we can't necessarily wait several decades to find out the answers to those, since we already know based on some studies and on the effects of people that they are toxic. We can't wait for it to be generally regarded as safe or generally known to be not safe.
So it was fascinating to go visit just for a brief moment a toxic environment like that, just to become aware of it. And then to, you know, the message really here is not to be a radical nutcase and avoid touching or being exposed to anything. It's just to realize the truth is that, you know, hey, there's a lot of stuff that may affect us, and you really want to have a default way of being in your life, hopefully, of intending to pursue health and to be in a, you know, as less toxic environment as you possibly can, and to not just capitulate that, oh, there's nothing you can do, and oh, it's all going to be okay, and yeah, they're going to take care of me, because it just ain't happening, and we're really significantly seeing the impact of that.
Absolutely. Which brings me to toxic home number two.
Okay. So, our dog is 12. He's very fluffy. He's lovely. You can see him on the website. And he gets great food and a great loving home at our place all the time.
Yeah.
Yet, we drop him off at Grandma's house for the weekend through the tunnel and over the hill. And the day he comes home, he has, the very next day, he has some neurological disorder.
Very, very serious neurological symptoms. Well, they call it old dog something or other.
Old dog vestibular disorder.
Oh, there you go. That was good.
Yes.
And basically, it's sort of like the way I describe it is... vertigo for dogs. So he can't really stand up straight. All of a sudden, boom, overnight, he can't stand up straight. If he goes to shake, shake his body, he falls over. He can't jump off the bed or where you can tell where he sleeps or somewhere else, you know, without misjudging it and then, you know, crashing into something. It's really, really scary and really heartbreaking. And we have a great vet. And so, you know, we did some acupuncture and we're doing some herbs and he is getting a little bit better. But, you know, nobody knows what causes this. And then we found out that our mother-in-law sprays ant poison, ants, what do they call that? Raid kind of stuff in the house. And of course, on the can, it says, made with botanical oils or something like that, making it sound like it's a natural product. And then you look on the side and it's full of toxic ingredients. And then we've pursued it further. And we are fairly convinced at this point that he, you know, dogs lick and get into everything. So I'm fairly certain at this point that this neurological poisoning that he got, that he has, was due to this ant poison that he must have gotten himself into. It's very, very upsetting. It's really, really disturbing. And it just goes to show you, you know, how do you kill ants? What is this ant poison? It's a neurological toxin. That's how it works. It depends what kind it is, but, you know, termite poisons, basically paralyze the nervous system so that they can't breathe or something to that effect. And the similar thing, I believe, that they do with ants. And so we know that these are known neurological toxins. And while in a human, a large 150-pound human, it's going to have a much slower response than in a, you know, quarter of an ounce ant or 1 gram ant or whatever this thing is. So it's not going to kill them instantly, but it its whole purpose is to kill organisms. And over the long term, whether it's a 1 gram ant or a 20-pound dog or a 150-pound person, the bigger you are, the slower it is and the longer it takes. But it will happen. That's the whole purpose of these poisons.
So we're hypothesizing that that he was exposed to something that was just quite a shock to him, quite a shock to his system. And we're fully expecting him to be back on his – I mean, he's been way better in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
But with – you know, they say it's just, you know, he'll be fully fine in a few days from now once he detoxes out, and he's already getting better. So – but, you know, I want to keep him away from that stuff. I mean, it's incredible that that kind of impact can, you know, plus he's a little bit older and more sensitive to it now.
Yeah, don't underestimate the strength of these toxins just because they're considered safe to be used in homes, quote, safe to be used in homes, or because they're marketed to be used in homes. Now knowing that the average household is 70 times more toxic than the average public building, the average public building, 70 times more toxic.
Ugh.
You know, just from that fact alone, we know that all of these things that we're spraying around or using, are they're not safe. So we really have to be conscious of everything that we're using, especially when we're around, or especially when children and animals are around. And, you know, one exposure for an adult might not cause permanent problems, but little exposure over the course of 10 or 20 or 40 years does. And then all of a sudden somebody ends up with, you know, I'm just going to throw some potential diseases out. I'm not saying that these are the cause of them, but you know, someone ends up with cancer or somebody ends up with MS or something. And then suddenly, quote, we don't know why. It's a mystery. It just happens. That's just the way life is. No, it's not the way life is. It's because we're poisoning ourselves.
Right. I think, and again, it pulls back to the message we were talking about earlier and the core principles of healthful living is like you're saying that is not how life is. The human body was built to evolve and to grow and has with incredible intelligence. It is not natural for the body to develop disease and illness unless some inhibitions and things happen and interfere with the system in some way. So by grasping that comprehension, we can then look at things in a completely different way as far as how do we then set ourselves up to best succeed in life, you know, in our physical life, in our emotional lives. Take the knowledge that we have and change our default thinking to how do we be proactive in sustaining this healthfully and not just be ineffective all these things around us, which clearly so many more areas are not working for us.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the kind of things we'll be talking about here on Reality Sandwich. Let's just stop back and take this collective we the humans perspective and say what's working, what's not working, and how can we then change the default to that which we choose to be healthy and not just to capitulate like unfortunately so many others do, that I'll just, you know, do what I'm told or buy the things I'm supposed to buy. I've been sold by the TV commercial that Fresh is this thing I plug in my wall, so I plug it in my wall and I have Fresh.
Yeah, what's fresh about one of those quote air fresheners anyway?
It's not fresh, but
there's nothing fresh about it. It's amazing.
But what's insulting, I feel, is that our conception of fresh has been sold to us by Glade on TV.
Right. Right.
So therefore we want to get the thing, we buy it, and it's doesn't help us, or we think we're getting fresh because we bought it and it's coming out the dispenser every month. You know, oh, it's a little puff. Remember when I saw that commercial with a puff of air?
Yeah.
And the lady's smiling at that. Oh, great, a little toxic blast in my room. And I make no correlation as to why we all have asthma or whatever. I'm not making a direct correlation. I'm just pointing out that there are associations, undeniably. So those are some of the things that we'll be speaking about going in through certainly all of next year as we're beginning to schedule out some of the shows over the next 6 months on Reality Sandwich. There'll be many more shows with myself here, both with Julie and with other guests. And what are some of the other subjects that we'll be covering, babe.
Boy, in the new year, we have somebody coming on to talk about digestive enzymes for health, both for digestion in kids and autism. We have somebody that's going to be talking about. We have several shows on autism. We have some shows on children in general. We have some shows on some naturopathic physicians just talking about different health conditions and being healthy in general. We have, a kind of your standard healthful living reality sandwich model of understanding how the natural therapies can support the body and things that we should be aware of. And so a whole host of new shows are on the way.
And I'll be doing my best to put my foot in my mouth by attacking the some political subjects as well. certainly the gentleman in the White House has, lots of wonderful topics to throw our way. And probably one of the greatest, most recent one is this whole thing with the bird flu and getting to the bottom of what's really going on there and how that's being used to push forth major legislation and to totally take over the health of the American public.
Well, interestingly, there's a website called Mercola.com, M-E-R-C-O-L-A, and he talks about this bird flu. It's very interesting to hear a medical doctor talk about the bird flu and basically the fear that they put in the ability to sell all of these, what are they, antiviral drugs that really aren't very effective to begin with, but create a lot of profit for people.
Do you know how many birds have died?
No. How many birds?
67.
Wow.
Little or no data available on any of them.
That's a pandemic.
Most of them already had immune-compromising medical conditions. These are the people, I'm sorry, that have died, right?
Oh, the people died.
67 people
okay.
have died.
Okay, okay.
I mean birds, I'm sorry. 67 humans have died as a result of this. And the conditions are so poor that we really haven't been able to really get a grasp of what this disease is. So there is no way that anybody could really be making a serious vaccine. And there isn't any serious vaccine. There's just something from a company called Tamiflu whose stuff the government's going to spend billions of dollars on. So essentially...
Yeah, and isn't that company like somehow directly correlated to one of those big guys in the...
Donald Rumsfeld still owns stock significantly in the company that originally created it and will profit by the millions. So here we are, ladies and gentlemen, as we spin the big wheel of Bush's handouts, which previously have included the defense industry, the oil and energy industry, huge. Of course, the biotech chemical folks are doing really, really well. Insurance has done really well, and banks. We've seen some recent legislation, right? The banks are gearing up their crunch on the you-know-whats of America. And then now, letting the last big animal out of the cage, it's time for Big Pharma to get their piece of the pie with the bird flu and billions of dollars going into their pockets to create something. And what's even more, since they also own the Senate, they're going to push through legislation that says that you can't ever sue them if something goes wrong.
Oh, that they might require you to get certain vaccines
exactly.
against your will, and then they cannot be sued if there's a problem.
All the government has to do is call it a countermeasure. Not a vaccine. It's a countermeasure to the alleged bird flu, and that they can, if this passes fully, force you. It's already on legislation, actually, from O2. They can force mandatory inoculation with this experimental, quote, vaccine, which may or may not work, and if it doesn't and accidentally kills whole tons of people, you can't sue anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You can't. That's what they're pushing through right now. Tell me how that is not total health tyranny and giving the government full control over our bodies.
Well, in our last 2 minutes, I thought we'd end on a good note. I got an email today about an article that was done in a, I don't remember where. And if anybody wants the article, they can email me. I'll send it to them. It's about parents choosing organics out of fear of the food quality or something. And so parents are saying, we don't know about these pesticides. We don't know what they do. I don't want to use them. I don't want to use those foods. So people are buying organic not only produce, but organic dairy and all sorts of things. So that was a really positive
note
that parents are really waking up and they're not giving their power and their common sense away to somebody else, but they're just saying, you know what, I don't really care if the evidence is there yet. This doesn't seem to make sense to me, and I'm not going to participate in it. And the more people that do that, the less expensive it'll become, and the better practices we'll have, and all of those good things. So there are more and more people out there choosing healthy options and a healthful way of living. And I think that might be a good place to end this show.
Excellent.
What do you think?
Yes, yes. So folks can check into the website in the coming days and weeks to find out all the new shows at healthfulliving.sf.com. Click on the radio icon. And I'm not sure exactly who's on next week, but...
I don't remember either, but it'll be a surprise.
Check the schedule.
And I am Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant, and I'm at julie@healthfulliving.sf.com.
And I'm Martin Matthews. I'm a certified medical hypnotherapist and personal coach, and you can catch me also at healthfulliving.sf.com.
And you've been listening to Healthful Living's radio show, Reality Sandwich. Check us out every Thursday at noon, either on 89.5 FM or on KPOO.com. We look forward to hearing from you, and stay tuned. Sometimes you make me blue. Sometimes I feel blue.